Okay, today is Sunday, February 14th, 2016. Now I understand why Simcha Mendelbaum walked into the Minyan this morning at 5:30 and wished everyone a happy Valentine's Day. So it shows you that we all live in two worlds, and that is the absolute reality of our existence, from Satma to Bnei Akiva Niks like yours truly. Now, we're in the middle. It's a fascinating individual, Reb Menashe Klein. You'll see today information enters into the tshuva that I don't believe any other respondent has ever written like that. He tells stories. He sounds like a kanoi, and then he backs down a little, and his insight into life is second to none. It is true that there's a certain prejudiced against women, which I'll talk about at a much later date when I deal with Ebenezer, but it's a result of his life story. And unfortunately, I know exactly what went on, probably one of the few people alive, because I was intertwined through a student with his life's story. Now, the Shaila is very interesting here. We're in the Chelek Yud Aleph, Siman Samach Bet, where this individual, Reb Ephraim Greenblatt, who is so much in the news today, and Reb Ephraim turns to him with a simple shaila that women in shul are knitting, crocheting, he's holding sheiwurim on Shmir HaLashon of the Chafetz Chaim, and is it nice for the shul that women crochet? Is it Kedushat Beit HaKnesset? Now you're allowed to sit there and crochet, sew, whatever women do, whatever word I should be using, I guess knitting or sewing. And it's an innocent question. And he turns on him, Menashe Klein, what are you asking me about women sewing? Ask me whether women are allowed into the shul at all. And we quoted the Gemara, we quoted already two, three Gemaras, where the Gemara says, what are women doing inside the Beis HaMikdash? What are women doing inside a shul? And Rabbi Menashe Klein seems to conclude, women have no place in the shul. So what are you doing, teaching, bringing women in? That's a chilul covered Kedushat Beis HaKnesset. Not the fact that they may be sewing or crocheting or knitting. All right, fine. And he goes and gets involved with, we ended off the class last week, with the whole question of a nida coming into shul. And this is a question that's been widely discussed. I quoted the Rav to you. Halacha l'maisa, you'll see it's in the Shulchan Aruch. Halacha l'maisa, we will not paskin today that women can't come into the shul. We're all Tamei'im, we're all Tamei Meit, every last one sitting here is a Tamei Meit. But nevertheless, Nida is a bigger Shaila than a Tamei Meit, and a lot has been written on it, but certainly if we allowed women to do Smicha on a Karban, Nachat Asul, and Nashim, it's a sugi in Shas and Kadshim, and we allow women to do Smicha so that they should feel appreciated, wanted, use whatever term you wish. Alachat kama v'kama, we allow women into shul. And I quoted the Rav to you, where the Rav, Rabbi Muskin's mother-in-law is the Zigman family. I don't know if I mentioned the name. It's a very prominent family that was very close to the Rav and helped him build Moriah and built Moriah around the Rav. And Mrs. Zigman, I believe it's Rabbi Muskin's mother-in-law, asked the Rav about women dancing with the Torah and Simchas Torah, and the Rav was very sharp, and he said, it's nothing to do with Nida, women can come into the shul, we paskin, we're mekil, it has to do with minhag Beit HaKnesset. And the Rav was very opposed to it, Mesoret Beit HaKnesset, that this is not proper behavior in a shul. And I need not tell you in parentheses, this is a problem, halavai, that should be the worst feminist problem we have today, of women taking a Sefer Torah and dancing in a separate part of the shul from men. I've paskin more than once, and you can understand, I've paskin not with happiness, but you don't lose a rabbinate over that problem. If the women insist, so let them take a Sefer Torah, go into a separate room and dance. Baruch Hashem, my wife, my daughters, I hope my great-granddaughters, my wife, my daughters, my granddaughter, I hope my great-granddaughters, so far, none of the first three generations that I'm talking about are interested in taking a Sefer Torah on Simchas Torah. But so the Rav, need is not the problem, and even Rabbi Nasha Klein indicates that there are many who are making on the question of Nida with women in shul. What was very fascinating last week, and I want to come back to it again, was the Rabbi Menashe Klein quoted a Tashbetz HaKatan. Who the Tashbetz HaKatan was, and I showed you how you can get information. And we got involved in a discussion about Chochmat Yisrael, and I went back to the same discussion on Monday, and there's no need to repeat anything, but all I can tell you is Chochmat Yisrael can be of tremendous help to us if a person is so inclined to have a more scientific approach to our sources. However, I'm not one that's in favor of teaching high school kids Nebuch Terei. When I was growing up, we knew how to learn. We had to learn at an early age. I remember Rabbi Yosef Weiss, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, said to me, quote, Shaya, listen to this. If you can't learn by the age of 19, you're never going to be able to learn. Today, I have students that are just starting to master a Daf Gemara at the age of 19. It's a different world. But we knew how to learn. Today, to take a high school kid and introduce them to Rav Adim, layers, it's confusing. Later in life, if he wants to broaden, if he wants, like Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig, to get a doctorate, because Sunterheit, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, it probably is the classic example of what Chochmat Yisrael is about today. I told him when Yenim came out, and I went and I spent went through it line by line, so I reached the conclusion, I told him, there may be 10 people in the world that understand your work, but I said, I am one of them. And you are now the gold letter, the gold standard for Chochmat Yisrael. He hugged me. He was very emotional. I think he had tears in his eyes. And this is Chochmat Yisrael. And I don't want to leave too many questions. I have a lot I want to do.
I just wanted to mention, do you think that there's a way to make inner genuinely from context to make results of Chochmat Yisrael relevant to...
Yeah, no, I think I'm making it right now in class when the last week with the Tashbetz HaKatan, who he is, how I know, the four volumes that Bar Ilan put out. This is valuable, valuable material. Now, what's fascinating about this Maharam, and remember everything I said last week, again, I don't want to repeat. We're talking about the Maram Rutenberg. We're dealing here with a major, major Rishon. So you see a number of things from what he mentions, and I'll give you more sources. And I want to thank Yomo, and I want to thank Professor Mori Tarrigan, who comes to the Monday class but listens to Sunday with his wife via the internet. They both gave me more sources. Interesting, they both did computer searches and each one came up with different sources on this very question. And I find it fascinating, I'll tell you why. And I mentioned this in class, I believe, last week as well. I want to build upon it. Look, we owe women a great debt for giving birth. When all is said and done, when we came out of the ghetto, and I spoke about this maybe 20 years ago, I have a whole shiur, very powerful. The biggest problems are the feminist problems. And what do we mean by that? In the morning, Donnie Kaplan says, Shaloh Asani Isha. Who the heck are you? Are you better than a woman? Are you smarter than a woman? Are you more pious than a woman? So the women are going crazy and have gone crazy until this very moment. As you know, I don't have to elaborate. Now, the pshat in Shaloh Asani Isha is very simple. We have more mitzvah than a woman. So we thank God for giving us more mitzvah than a woman. Plain and simple, that's the pshat. It has nothing to do with who is better and who is finer and who is closer to God. That's impossible. We are all equal. We are all created in God's image, man and woman. But there's a distinction of responsibility. It's like a Kohen perhaps should say, Shaloh Asani Yisrael, because he has more mitzvah to do, or maybe we have the Mamadot, I don't know, maybe we equal him out, I don't think so. A Kohen has more, could be a Kohen. Check it out, if anyone ever said a Kohen should make a special bracha, Shaloh Asani Levi, Shaloh Asani Yisrael, Sabarnot, he is a Levi, but Baruch Hashem, he's a Kohen. All right, food for thought. Anyway, M. Samuels, Moshe Samuels from London, translated Mendelssohn's Yerushalayim into English. It's a philosophical essay of Moses Mendelssohn, and he translated it into English, and he makes the comment in the introduction, I couldn't believe my eyes, that the women are complaining about the bracha shelo asana yisha. He says, a man makes the bracha because if men had to give birth, there'd be a zero birth rate. Shelo asana yisha, that we are spared all the pain and heartache and grief and yelling and shouting. And if you don't believe me, just look at Shtissel, where they have a scene where the woman is given. Why they do that, I don't know. My wife and I were both offended by it. There's a moment in life that's sacred, but today the movies have to show everything. Someone goes to the bathroom, they show him in the bathroom. Someone's having relations with his wife, they show him having relations. There's no modesty left in the world. There's no modesty. It's unbelievable. And my wife gets an architectural magazine, five different stories about five couples, two men, and here they're holding a baby. God have mercy where we're living today. So what we're living with. So women give birth. It is rough and tough. So that's why we say, Shalom Estani Yishnetz Drush. But it's powerful drush, that's all I can say, because it's as true today as it was in 1840, and it'll be as true in 2140 as it is today. Now, if women go through all this, they want to have some acknowledgement, and we can understand it. And this is why, for instance, I told you this, Minig Yisrael is that the woman who gives birth has the right to the name of the first child. That's Minig Yisrael. No arguments about it. I write about it in the Rav, where the Rav speaks. Remember I told you how he got the name Yosef Dov Halevi, when it should have been his wife, his mother, Rebbetzin Pesha, she should have chosen the name, not his father. So the Rav explains why. Now, this drive, you can understand, women want to be involved in the Brit Milah. She just had a baby. The mother of the baby went through hell. It reminded her of her own travails. Her daughter was in such pain, and they want to be involved. And the desire to be a sandakayat, I'll call it, we can understand. Now you got to be very careful when you deal with the literature, because I'll show you an example where they refer what we call a kvatrin or kvatrinit, they call a sundakat. In other words, there's a whole procedure involved here. What can a woman do? What can't a woman do? What has evolved over the years is that women in my time, I never yet heard of a woman being a sundak. That's why when I heard about the Lindenbaum being a sundakayat, I was shocked. Now I'm not shocked anymore. I see, here's the Tashbetz talking about it. But what about being a kvatrin, a kvatrinit, I'll call it. What do we mean by a kvatrin? The people who bring the baby into the shul, bring the baby up to the place where they do the Brit Milah. Some of you see a baby's handed from hand to hand. There's no limit how many. You can only have one sundak by definition. But there's no end to how many kvatranim you can have. So the baby is handed from hand to hand. So I saw in the halachic literature that sometimes they call the kvatrin a sandakat. Now, can you have that? There too, there's shailas. Why? The woman is giving the baby to a man. She's giving it to the sandak. She's giving it to the moral. Whoever she's giving it to, is she allowed? So you see, these questions come up, but we can understand the woman's desire. In addition, I have to say that in this case, it's a lot easier at least to think in terms of being Mekil, because Tzipora did the Brit Milah for Moshe Rabbeinu's two sons, for her two sons. And there's a lot of literature written. What do you do with the Yavad? Imagine, for the sake of argument, Danny Kaplan becomes a chaplain in the American Army. And he's stationed in Khandikova, stationed in Kalamazoo, whatever, I don't know. And no mole is available. And there's one doctor in the nearby hospital who is frum and everything, but it's a woman and she's willing to do the Brit Milah. For her, she does major surgery. A Brit Milah is already minor league surgery. Are you allowed to have a woman do the Brit Milah? You follow? And there's been a lot written already. Alright, I hope it's not halacha l'maisa. Now, I'll tell you what's fascinating. When you open up the Shulchan Aruch, this story of the Maharam reaches the Ramah. Look in, I'll give you the source. It's, for some of you, it's halacha l'maisa, can I hurry? For me, I'm having great grandsons. It's also halacha l'maisa. I've already been a sandik for a number of my great grandchildren. Resh Samech Hei, Sif Chatan Yud Aleph in the Ramah. And first of all, and there's a large literature, and I'm just quoting from the Ramah now. V'yafa koach ha-sandek mikoach ha-mohel, lahakdimo l'kriyata Torah, the kol sandek havi k'maktia k'torah. See, that goes against our gut reaction. If I would have asked you in the middle of the night, you understand that expression, the middle of the night, Matan? It's from the Rav. The Rav used to say, because in the middle of the night you don't have defense mechanisms, you're not thinking. So if you're not thinking, you're going to give a gut clear reaction. So if I wake you up in the middle of the night and I say to you, what do you think? Who's more important, the Mal or the Sandek? And what do you say, Avraham? You're going to say the Mal is more important, right or wrong, logically speaking. No, the Sandek is more important. The Sandek is like a Kohen who is Maktir the Ketoret. If he wouldn't hold the baby, the Mal couldn't do his job. Now, what's the minig Yisrael, and yes.
Well,
one
could also do something. Just put
it
on his laps.
That would be sakonet nefashet. I wouldn't. If you have rachamim on the baby, I wouldn't recommend the mohel. It's just the opposite. They won't let anyone be a sandak whose hands are shaking. You have to. The Rav, I remember when the Rav was asked to be a sandak, it was one of the holes of Britot in the 70s, and the Rav already was not well. He was very chayshish to be sandak, and they said, Rebbe, we're going to hold your hands down. Don't worry, we're going to stand in the back of you and assist you, stand on the side of you. So when you're maktir ketoret, tell me, once, are you allowed to be involved in the next lottery? Absolutely not. Because if you maktir ketoret, you become very wealthy. So you win the lottery once. I know in the world today they have lotteries that are unbelievable sums of money. You should know if you would win that lottery, it's the greatest tragedy that would ever happen to you. Because what do? Suddenly a schnorrer like me, suddenly I have $100 million. You understand? You got to know what to do with money.
Most people would probably be willing to tough it out.
Well, statistics show they don't tough it out. Statistics show that more than 80% of people winning a heavy sum in a lottery, it causes tremendous problems in their life.
All I know is that one grandson has a sandbag from the time he was 6 months to about a year and a half. Every time I walked in the room, he started crying.
Baruch Hashem. It's not you. Believe me. Anyway, coming back here, so Minig Yisrael, this is fascinating. Ulechein nohagin shelo liten shnei yeladim lebal brit echad kidi amrinen. I skipped the line. Lebal brit echad can amrin gabi ketoret chadashim lektoret. That the minig Israel is that once you're a sandek once in a family, you're not a sandek twice for the same family. Now you check that out with Hasidic Rabbeim, and you will find that they don't accept this Ramah. Many Hasidic Rabbeim, he is the sandak for every Brit in his Rebbeshaft.
I'm sure there's some Rebbes can't pull that off.
No, there probably are exceptions, but this is the halacha. that we're not the Sandek twice in the same family. This is the Minig Yisrael. I would say the Halacha, because the Rama brings it down the Halacha. But it's based upon Minig Yisrael. I can't say if someone insists. Imagine if you have a grandson who insists, my grandfather is very special, I want him to be the Sandek for all my children. Still, the Rama says what he says, and it makes sense. And then the Rama goes further. The ein li isha liot sandik letinak b'makom she'efsha be'ish mishum da'havei kapritzat u'mikom akom hi'ozeret lebala u'meviyach ha'tinok ad beit ha'kneset v'oz lokeach ha'ish mimena v'na'aseh sandik. Wow, these two lines in the Ramah are very deep, and it shows you his deep understanding of women who have just given birth. A lady goes through labor, a woman shouldn't be sandek if there's a man available. So what do you see from that? What do you see from that? So you see that women were sandekayot. At times there were no men. What does it mean? A man not available, man not capable, no close relative, no close relatives alive. The women were she'efsha be'ish. Umikom akom, to be a kvatrenit, there's no question. And look at the way he paskins. She brings the baby into the shul and gives it to the man. What is the source of this Rama? So you have in parentheses the Maharam Rutenberg, exactly the source that we have quoted. It comes up time and again in the Franco-Ashkenaz literature. It goes back to the Tashbetz HaKatan, and he quotes the Maril. Everyone quotes this source from the Maharam Rutenberg. Now, I want to tell you in parentheses, how did I get the source? I just quoted to you. You all have learned Rama. You all know in your Adaya, you all see time and again sources in parentheses. It's an open question. Who did the sources? We're not sure. There seems to be general opinion that the Rama himself did not do it. It's someone who came after the Rama, when the Rama was already published, and he took upon himself the task of finding the source for every psak of the Rama. And this is attributed to the Maharam Rutenberg. So you see the fascinating Tashbetz HaKatan makes the halachic literature. On this Rama, a Sefer Shiurei Bracha, he speaks in terms of a sandekayet when it's really a kvatranit. That's what I warned you about. You have to be careful what term is being used and what the term exactly means. And he already deals with the problem of the woman giving to the man. That's why the minhag is there are two pillows. So she's holding one pillow, the man is holding another pillow underneath the baby, and it's not going to be physical contact. And all of them quote time and again the pritzot, the woman coming into the men's section. And you can see all the available material that both Yomo and Professor Tarikin came up with. Time and again, you can see lachatchila absolutely forbidden. Bidiavad, I can understand already, if a woman insists and it's going to cause a tremendous commotion, ein dat chachamim nocha, but we can understand what's happening. Okay, so that's the first part that I wanted to elaborate on what we quoted last week. And now I want to go a drop further. And this is fascinating. This is what I referred to before. And he brings in halakhic concepts, moral concepts, ethical concepts, that I saw this with my own eyes. He says, and I'll give you another reason why women aren't allowed into the shul, why you can't hold a lecture in the shul. And he says, a shul, what does it mean, a shul? A shul, look at a shtibble in Borough Park. Shtibble in Borough Park is open 7:24. People are constantly going, not just davening. We learned Svarim, it's a base medrash. Women are going to come in and have a class. You are being mevatel the men who have to go out of the shul. Women don't have to learn Torah. They have no chiyuv. Men have to learn. You're causing bitul Torah. Now, is this realistic?
Well, yeah,
in a modern Orthodox shul like Rabbi Greenwald, like we're talking about here, a Rav in what was he, in Memphis, Tennessee, right, talking about Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt in Memphis, Tennessee, tell me, modern Orthodox shuls, do you see men learning in the Beis Medrash by day? You follow? People are working, people are gone, the shul is locked. The Shtiblach in Katamon is open all day. It's true that there people are learning. There's a Beis Medrash. For women to come into the Shtiblach in Katamon would not only be pritzut, it would be goreim bitul Torah. But as far as a modern Orthodox shul, I don't know if this is applicable. And then he goes one step further. And here, the whole end of the tshuva gets involved with this question. It says, women are coming to shul. Who takes care of the children? Who will babysit? What's going to happen? And the women are going to leave the men home to babysit? And what he's saying is, quoting the Gemara in Baba Batra, Olam hafuch ani ro'eh. The world has gone insane. The world is turned upside down. Men are sitting who have a chiyuv to learn Torah. They're taking care of the children. They're doing the babysitting. And women who have no chiyuv to learn Torah, they are in the shul learning and leaving the men behind. And he quotes the Gemara, you're familiar with the Gemara in Brachot, and that what is the biggest chut of women? The Gemara asks, why are women so privileged? Why are women considered so righteous? The Gemara in Brachot, Daf Yud Zayin Amid Aleph. And what does the Gemara say? Because the women make it possible for both their husbands and their children to learn Torah. If the husbands and children wouldn't be able to leave the house, and how the Gemara describes, the women take the children and carpool them, what you have today. One of the reasons my wife wanted to get out of America is the carpooling, what used to go on, driving the kids, Maplewood to Elizabeth, where they were, in Rabbi Teitz's day school. Carpooling, the women walked the kids to Talmud Torah, to Cheder. It goes on until today. And this is their big schut. Then they wait for their husbands to come home, and they're happy to see them, and they have a hot meal prepared. Rav Menashe Klein is talking, and he's describing reality. And here, look what you're doing. Instead of the women helping the men are helping the women so they can go to shul to learn Torah, and halacha lemaisa, men are obligated, women are not. And he quotes here the Igeret HaTshuva of Rabbeinu Yonah. You see the whole quote, you see the whole source, that a woman's job is to remind a man to open a sefer every day. He comes home from work. He comes home tired. The woman has to remind him, Yaskiru lo ba'aleichem, to open a sefer, that a day should not pass, a night should not pass, where they haven't studied something. Wow. So, now think in terms of modern context. Men and women. Imagine women who want to learn, who want to study. Michlala graduates. All right? The world, we owe Rabbi Koopman a great debt of gratitude. He made it possible for women to study Torah on a very high level. When I joined the Michlala faculty in 71, I was an amoritz compared to the rest of the faculty members. Among them were Mamash Gedolei, Gedolei Yisrael. And then you take today with the feminist thrust and Lindenbaum's and Reb Aaron's daughter, Esti Rosenberg, and her school. And how are women going to feel when they hear this? I want to tell you in parentheses, halachically speaking, Reb Menashe Klein is absolutely right. Pure halacha, the woman is not obligated, the man is obligated. But halacha lemaisa, I would say you have to work out a compromise, because in contemporary times, women have this spiritual thrust, and we're caught up with this quagmire at this very moment.
Wait, is and, it a spiritual quest? Women in more traditional circles.
No.
Give
women credit.
I think we have this situation that's going on in someone else's mind.
Reb Moshe, when he writes that the women are just motivated by feminine aspects, it may have been true then, I don't want to say Reb Moshe was wrong. But I know women today, these are women who can study anything. And chashka liba b'torah. So I say you have to work out a compromise. But this leads me to two interesting stories that actually happened. One, I think I've told this story before, I tell it again, I've told it to my grandchildren, it's Meredith Musa. A friend of mine who's about 10 years older, he's not well today. He was a poor boy in the yeshiva getting smicha, but a very nice individual and always someone who knew how to make a dollar. You don't recall this, but they used to have in every college a Chesterfield Svetla Briyuta presented. No one knew that smoking would kill you then. So in every college they would have a Chesterfield's representative who would sell cigarettes, and he would make a little money on the side. He was a poor kid, an orphan, and then he reaches the age, he's getting smicha, so they set him up with a very prominent rabbi's daughter, granddaughter of a gadol b'Yisrael, and he goes out with her, and they're at the movies, and she starts hitting him over the head. You're not learning enough, you're not studying enough, and you should be a bigger, you know, exactly the Musa that Rabbeinu Yonah tells a wife to give a husband. And he got so disgusted, he tells her he has to go to the powder room, and he walks out and he never came back. He left her there in the movie. It was one of the biggest mistakes that he ever made in his life, because she then married a classmate of his, who went on to become a very famous rabbi. He's alive today. His wife is gone, unfortunately. He remarried. I don't want to mention the name, but you all know the name, a very famous rabbi. Whenever YU ran an affair, they were always both there. And here he was from the late 40s until a few years ago. Time and again, he had to look at the woman who he had walked out on and had been so mean to, had to look at her face and act cordial to her. And he always would say, if I ever made a mistake in my life, that was the mistake. Anyway, but from that you see, number one, be a mensch. Never, if you have a date, it doesn't work out, so take the lady home and be a mensch, but don't walk away in the middle of the date. Wow. That's number one. Number two, fascinating. she's giving mussar like Rabbeinu Yonah, but she's not yet married to him. So you have to use a little seichel there, okay? Not always can you hit someone over the head at a preliminary stage. That's one part. Yes, yes.
Should literally hit him? No.
Figuratively. No, Chas v'Chai didn't hit him. It's figuratively. But in the middle of the movie, she's giving him what's this? He hacked him a Chinese. If you don't know Yiddish, Avraham, I don't say that in any other language. She's hitting him over the head. Hacked him a Chinese. And I don't know what it means. Believe me, in Yiddish, I don't know what a Chinese is. A Chinese? I think it's a teapot, a tea kettle. So it means she's hitting him over the head with a tea kettle. I never could understand. Was kommt a Chinese to hitting him over the head? But that's one thing. But now I want to say something a little bit deeper. Imagine if you get this very question. Rafi is in the rabbinate. I met his chief rabbi the other day, my Talmud, Rabbi Per, Yen Per. I asked him, how you doing? He broke into a big smile.
He spoke here a while back in the Outreach Training Center.
Yeah, so he and his wife are both my students, Baruch Hashem. He's a very interesting individual. And imagine Ian Per or Rafi, you get the Shaila. A couple comes to you and says, Rabbi, we want to do what's right. And my husband learns, and I want to learn too. Somebody who answer them. I mean, imagine, I never got questions like that 50 years ago. Who heard of women sitting and learning and writing Chidushei Torah, giving a learned talk, citing Rishonim Achronim? I just found out a woman just did a doctorate on the Minchat Chinuch. And my next door neighbor, who's the dean of one of the schools in Michala, told me she knows that she did it. She can learn better than any man. It's unbelievable. And Rabbitson, happily married, many children, unbelievable. Doctorate on them. You got to know who the Mincha Chinuch was, Rabbi Baba. Then dealing here with a very innovative mind. Dealing here with a Hungarian, a Galiciana, I should say. Who Reb Chaim Briska brought into the literature world. So how do you answer that couple? So I'll tell you a good story now, which I think I also told you when Reb Arl Lichtenstein died. So one of the stories that came out was a Talmud for a graduate of Haaretzion, married in Avreich. So he comes to Reb Aaron, they have little children, and he comes to Reb Aaron and he says, Rebbe, I have a... You know, my wife is always home with the children. She'd like to go to shul on Shabbos. Maybe I can work out with her. And he quoted the Gemara in Brachot, where they reach a compromise, who dashens when they overthrew the Nasi, 3 in 1. I'll go 3 weeks out of the month, and she'll go the 4th week, or she'll go Shabbos Mevarchim, whatever, when there's something special, and I'll babysit. You follow? 3 weeks she babysits, and I go to shul Shabbos morning, and the 4th week, I babysit, and she goes to shul. So Rav Aaron said to him, don't ask me shailas like that. That shaila you have to ask the rabbi from your generation. You follow? My generation, we couldn't even conceive of such a question. A woman is not chayavit in tefillah b'tziba. She's not kviyat haTorah. All that a man is chayavin. Where does a woman should say to the man, you stay home? So that's exactly what Reb Menashe Klein is saying. But Reb Aaron said it very elegantly. Ask someone, a rabbi from your generation. And there's no question, like I've said time and again, the question of feminism, we're in it's a question that we're living, that we're going through. It's a question in progress. It's a quest in progress. I can't say we have the black and white ultimate answers. We know somewhat what we can't do. We know what we can do. But there's a lot of a gray area that we're going through. There's no question that Hashkama Minyan, I've always davened Hashkama Shabbos, and I still rush home after davening to wake my wife up, she goes to her shul.
And I'm sure they're not getting that shaila in Lakewood.
I wouldn't quote Lakewood so happily. Wait till you hear tomorrow's shir.
No, come on, don't say that. That's not.
I wouldn't quote. No,
that's
Alex.
From community.
Alex, they have plenty of problems.
Yeah,
there
so
too.
Well, so
yeah, no, but say that. We're living, we all live
in
two
worlds.
Alex, please, I'm not saying it's, they have problems too. No one has the perfect answer.
And
Alex, if Gerach HaSidiyot ran a ticket for the Knesset, you know what I'm talking about, the last election. So please, we're all caught up with these problems.
Judge from the fact that there were that the quote unquote Haredi Women's Party.
I'm talking about if
that's not
no, please, we all have problems today. I can't say anyone has the ultimate. So they don't have this question. They have other questions, but I'm not certain they don't have the sequel. Who knows what's going on already? The women are learning. The women are erudite. The women have PhDs, and we have. Okay, I hope you're right that they don't have this problem now.
I said before, I've said many occasions that the focus on quote unquote feminism and women's issues keeps being. You keep centering on that there's a deeper problem of just secularism that's driving it. It's pretty clear. I have lectures on this. I can map out for you exactly.
Okay, no. Look, I don't.
I think that's a little bit of a smokescreen that people keep harping on this issue. Obviously this seems to be the focal point right now.
No.
Let me end this off
because it's a very deep problem. We're living it. We're going to live it yet for another 49 years. But what you're saying, that it's driven by feminism, you're absolutely right. A woman is part of the big world. She gets different messages. But I don't want to question the sincerity of a woman when she comes and says, I want this study. Why can't I? A woman said to Rabbi Riskin 40 years ago, every toilet-trained male can put on tefillin. I have a PhD from Columbia. Why can't I put on tefillin? You follow?
But
don't.
And somebody who really knows what tefillin is not going to be her.
But don't.
No, I'm not. I'm saying what 99% of the rabbis say out there. So don't Alex me.
Don't give them credit that the motive is sincere.
I don't think that's true. I think if you knew more about psychology and you knew more about and how to map out the depths of a human being, you'd look at it and you'd say, that's a Mida, and you'd say, it's not coming from the right place, and there's something off in her dot because she's driven by a Mida, and if you did work on it and you learned more Torah and you clarified the issues, you would be able to see that, and people who are real mashpiyim know how to do that and would see that.
All right, I hope you're right, but I go with the approach that we have to treat their quest seriously and see how we can solve it within the halachic context. And we have to understand that today a woman can do a lot more let's say, my great-grandparents. I don't know if the women knew how to read Hebrew. So today you're dealing with a different reality. But we have to give them credit. We can't say to them that your motives are not sincere, that you're influenced by Obama, etc.
You can't ever say that something is motivated by the Yetzer Hara or secularism, by values that are not in line with Torah. You don't have to be judgmental.
Alex, believe me, I've spent 47 years dealing with the problem of the two worlds in which we live. So, beside that, all right, we can have a difference of opinion, it doesn't matter. But I want to go further. Now he tells a story, and this is second to none. And after he's given poor Rabbi Greenblatt this whole story, what are you asking me such a silly question, whether they can crochet? What are they doing in the Beit HaMedrash? Where are the men? And he says, let me tell you something. A few years ago, an Evreich, a young Avreich, Tzeltzer, called me. And he asked me the following shaila. He's alone in his house, and a Goya has come in to clean the house. In other words, they have a maid. There are people who, I've seen people who have a moderate income, but they will not wash the floors, not clean the house. It's like in their mentality, this is a shiksa's job. All right? What's the shaila? Follow yeshlo yelid ben dalid utinokot bat gimel ve'echad ben gimel chadashim. There are three children at home, 4, 3, and 3 months. Is there an Issa Yichud? That's the Shaila. The guy is coming in to clean the house. All right, if you have older children, there's no Shaila, children who know what men and women are. But here, these are young children. So I asked him, Rabbi Menashe Klein says, where is your wife? And he answered me, she went to a shir, and he's left home alone with the Goya to take care of the children. I answered him, in my humble opinion, you and your wife both suffer from lack of knowledge and understanding. The woman is foolish. She lets her husband home alone with a Goya? So right away, the woman, how do you like that? And now I have to tell you in parentheses, I know of two cases. I don't want to mention names or what or where. One from the greater YU world and one from the greater Hasidic world. And in both cases, the men ran off with a different woman. One was a Goya, and this is a prominent chassid. Forget it. When he came back in his old age, a big rebbe gave him a kibbutz. You don't know what went on in the social media. What's the matter with this rebbe that he gives a kibbutz to this guy who ran off with the Goya who was cleaning his house? So he says, how does your wife let you? V'habal chalsedat. And the Baal, the man, has no seichel because he's chayav to learn. It should be just the opposite. He should be at a shir and his wife should be home taking care of the children instead of the woman who has no obligation what to do. Wow. The man is stupid. The woman is stupid. Olam hafucha niroa. And he knows, you see, Rabbi Menashe Klein knows he's being very extreme. Moshe, let me finish the trip. I want to cover ground. And he knows I'm being very extreme. And he says, I don't care. I know people are going to laugh at me and criticize me. Aval ha'emet hu kein. V'ani muchrach lahagid ha'emet ki hagam. Even though it's not pleasant, even though people are going to laugh at me, people are going to be critical, but this is the truth, and I have to state it. And women belong at home babysitting, not at a shir. And then he goes one step further. Moshe, you want to ask me on this? I want to go one step further, something interesting. Yeah, that affects you, Moshe, what I'm going to talk about in 1 second.
What happens if it's a shir on the Taras Mishpacha, or how to get closer to your spouse?
Believe me, Moshe's asking, people complained that last week when people asked something, they wound up asking. Moshe's asking, what if it's a shir on Taras Mishpacha? What if it's a shir on working out a happy marriage? Moshe, I'm with you 100%. And Reb Menashe Klein, maybe had it been phrased that way, not a class in Chafetz Chaim, not a class in Shmirat Halashen, maybe he would have been more amenable.
And
we know that the Chafetz Chaim wrote for the women about Taharat Mishpacha. We know that Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer. Again, but you're dealing with the mentality. The Ben Ish Chaim, and they just put out from the Lubavitcher Rebbe an entire sefer from his Sichot. And that we can go on and on. But he's coming from his background. And boy, is he sharp. But now he mentions something fascinating. No, I want to ask you a question.
Moshe,
I mean, you're coming in, why this, why that? This is the reality. Good. That would be what I would answer. That if the cleaning lady is and the kids are young and there's a shaila of yichud, have her come when your wife is at home. But that's common sense. Okay. But he says something here that is so fascinating. And this is where if I recall correctly, and I spoke about this many decades ago, the Upper West Side made response to literature in Menashe Akutin's writings. What happened? Very simple. Sukkot time. People built the sukkah on the Upper West Side, and Gentiles threw rocks into the sukkah. And Rabbi Menashe Klein gets the she'elah, the question, how much a person has to spend to be mekayim a mitzvah asay. In other words, if you can't build the sukkah on the Upper West Side, then maybe you're obligated to go up to the mountains. And those, in my days in the mountains, you had the Pioneer, you had the Pine View, you had frum hotels with big sukkot. Maybe you're obligated. Nu, chamavaz beis, al yivaz beis, yotem mechomesh. But what does it cost to go away? Very fascinating question. And you should know, Reb Nasha Klein, Paskins Lahalacha, if my memory is correct, that if you can't afford to go away, and they're going to throw rocks into the sukkah, mitzta'er pata min hasukkah, on the Upper West Side. So here he raises another problem. Tell me, can you walk the streets at night? And he says, the women are going to a shir, and they're coming back late at night. You cannot walk the streets at night. It is sakonet nefashot. Shafilu le'ish yesh sakana lalechet berichovot. V'kol sheken lisha. V'hagam ki kavanatam l'tovah. He says, they have the best of intentions. But walking the streets, sakana. Sakana, not just for a woman, even for a man. You all know in Crown Heights last week, a chassid was viciously attacked. They say it's a hate crime. I don't know if they found the attacker, but I saw on one of the websites, could be on Yeshiva News, they have his picture. They show him running after the chassid. They have his picture. Unbelievable. So you walk in the streets, Allah kama b'kama, not at night. And then he ends off the tshuva that, you see, with all that he's written, I think he realizes no one is going to listen to him. He's a little bit extreme here. So he ends off the tshuva following this theme of the streets being dangerous, that if you want my opinion, you should try to make the shayurim by day. If you make it by day, I wouldn't lo hayiti mitnaked kol kach, even though I'm not convinced it's mutter, but I wouldn't be so opposed. Avo b'layla late man. No one will agree with you. How can you do it? How can you have the woman walk in the streets? And that's his answer to a great posek, Reb Ephraim Greenblatt, who you all know was very close to Reb Moshe Feinstein and was highly respected, the Riverboat Ephraim, in the Torah world. So that is a fascinating opinion, Reb Menashe Klein, women, men, babysitters, modern life, Shmirat HaLashon, even that, as I called your attention to, I wonder how women react when the inquirer says, you know that women are dabraniot, they gossip, and therefore they have to learn Shmirat HaLashon. No, and men don't gossip. But Rakefet brought a very strong proof that it could be women. Again, you have to do a study. I don't know how you can do a study. Listen to a million telephone conversations, emails, and reach a conclusion. But one thing, you can't say Rakefet is wrong. You can't negate him. Why? As far as I know, all the gossip columnists in all the newspapers are women. And you know, all the papers in Israel, Yisrael Hayom, Mariv, Yediot, It's all women who are doing it. Those of you who remember Haaretz, the famous Sylvia Keshet, she almost broke down. That was one of my introductions to Israeli politics. I don't want to tell you the story, but boy, did I learn that politicians are far, far from Gedolei Yisrael. That's all I can tell you. They put on tefillin, they daven three times a day, they talk the talk, but wow, at times they don't walk the walk. And Sylvia Keshet, I can still remember in the 70s, she was a famous, I don't know if she's alive yet, Sylvia Keshet, she had a, wow, one of the politicians went to court, he was suing her for defamation, and when she was ready to bring the witnesses in, the case ended immediately, and he had to apologize for suing her, settled with her out of court, and it was obvious, Emet v'Emunah, everything she said. So anyway, this is interesting, an interesting tshuva, women, modern life, and I think Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein said it best, don't ask me the question, ask a rabbi from your generation. All right, let's move one step further. Me'inyan li'inyan, not exactly oto inyan, but here, very fascinating. And the person who asked the question is none other than a YU graduate, someone that everyone in the American-Israeli community knows, Dov Frimmer. Have you heard of Dov Frimmer? Dov Frimmer, I believe originally from Chicago. Father was very big on the American Jewish scene. Norman Frimmer, Zayezichon, was a Yirat Tzadik. And he has wonderful children. I believe the whole family lives in Israel, as far as I know. And Dov is a very prominent lawyer in Yerushalayim, specializing in family law. He's a Talmud Chacham, a first-rate Talmud Chacham. He was even mentioned at one time as a candidate for the Supreme Court. Very fascinating, fine, good, a dedicated Talmud Chacham, Yirat Shemayim individual. Like many lawyers, you'll hear criticisms, and that's part of the ballpark of being a lawyer. teaches, but he's in Dinei Ishut. And when you get involved in Dinei Ishut, you get involved in very difficult situations. Tremendous tension, and all the Yetzer Hara, a person to Han. Here they were in love, here they were married, here they had children, and suddenly they are public enemies, number one for each other. It's very, very sad. Anyway, that's Dov Frimmer. In my own relationship with him, I sent him to Russia with his brother. They were shluchim for me. And later in life, he paid me back because I had the case, what I write about in Washington, of the woman who needed the chalitza from a brother who was a communist in Russia. And I came up right in this classroom looking at my Talmud, Bini Blau, Rabbi Benjamin Blau of Cleveland, if you remember. A light bulb went off in my mind. I came up with a tray with a double suffix. And those of you who know what I'm talking about halachically, tray sveika, number one, perhaps we paskin that if you have a brother who's a muma, there is no Zikatayibim, you don't need chalitza. There is a sheet in Rishonim, we don't paskin that way, but you'll find it in the Gainim. And number two, he was quite ill when she married him. He was much older. She did not know how ill he was. Could be a mekach tot, had she known, she would have never married him, logically. So I put together Trey Sveikot, and I needed to go into the rabbinic court. It's not like I write about this in Washington. It's not like America, where I would have called Reb Moshe and told Reb Moshe the story. Whatever he would have told me, I would do. Here, you got to go into rabbinic court. You have to get the right for her to marry. So I needed a lawyer to represent her. And Dov from a Tikkanda case pro bono, and it was very fascinating for both of us because he went from court to court, and they all said that it's what I'm saying is very logical, but they're not big enough to be matir to go to an Adam Gadol. I don't know if they mentioned the name Rav Avadya. It was my idea to go to Rav Avadya, but Dov and I went to, I had access to Rav Avadya. I knew his lawyer, and I think Dov too knew the lawyer, and we got in immediately.
What year was this?
I write about it, give you the exact year. It's in the late 80s, 87, 88, 87, let's say, 88. And I taught Rav Avadya's daughter, so he knew exactly who I was. He had sent me reprints with thanks because he had a daughter. Michala. Yeah, that's the daughter who became it. She's the religious Zionist in the family. Her husband is a Ram in Hesdi Yeshiva. He's the Sfadik chief rabbi, if I'm not mistaken, of Modi'in.
What's her name?
Chakova, Masha, who can say it's a Sfadik name. Chakova, he was from Argentina. And he studied in Hakota, a big Talmud Chacham, big Yerei Shemayim. He's the Ram in Hesdi Yeshiva today too. And Rav Avadya, I'll never forget, I told him, and within a half minute, he understood me. Within a half minute, you see, his mind worked, his eyes lit up, and he told us, he told Dov Frimmer, he'll contact him within a week, he'll have a written shiva for him. Within a week, he contacted Dr. Frimmer, went back to see him, Rabbi Frimmer went back to see him, and he gave him like a 20-page, legal-page shiva with endless sources proving me right, but because it was revolutionary, I spoke about this in great length. He made the tenai that you can make in Paskening. He wanted two other Gadol Yisrael to agree with him, and then we searched. I took that on. That was my doing, and I got to Rav Shalom Mishash, and I got to Rav Shol Yisraeli, who wrote long tshuva to support Rav Avadya, and it was I put Rav Henoch Cohen, he's no longer alive, as a YU Musmach out of the 40s, I believe. I put him in charge of being the nudnik with Rabbi Mishash, because Rabbi Mishash was daven in the shul where we davened, and we finally got him to write the tshuva, and Rav Shol Yisraeli wrote a long, long tshuva. Rav Waldenberg told me he won't write a tshuva lahatir, but he won't oppose us either. That's what the Tzitz Eliezer said to me. And all this was later published, and it wasn't halacha l'maisa, because by 89 the curtain fell. We got the woman into Russia. She gave her brother $1,000. He danced the Kazatska and pleaded with her to send a visa for her to come, for him to come to Israel. It was quite a story, and I was very embarrassed that people asked me how I'm related to the woman. I met the woman once in my life when I went to her with papers that Dov gave me for her to sign a Yipui Koach to appoint him her power, give him a power of attorney to represent her in court. Later, she brought her son to meet me, who was studying already in a Mamlachti Dati school. She wanted him to see what a Jew looks like. Okay. It's quite a story. Anyway, this is Dov Frimmer, and this is my relationship with him. And let me tell you what happens here. And this is what's, to Reb Menashe Klein's credit, he knew who Dov Frimmer was. And nevertheless, he answers every question he ever got from him. And if you look at the famous article about women and being Balak Tefillah, and the article that the Frimmer brothers published in tradition 2 years ago, let's say, a whole tradition, remember? A lot of the response of literature is from Rav Menashe Klein, and we'll get to it, but not yet. Now, this tshuva is Chelik Yudalit, Mishnah Halachot, Siman Pei. And it deals with a problem that all of us have, halacha lemaisa. A wedding, sheva brachas, do you need separate seating? And here's where I told you that my rebbeim, I remember discussing this already in the 50s when Chassidim had come to America, the Yungarisha came to America, And you started hearing separate seating. Until then, no one ever heard of separate seating at a wedding. The most you heard was separate dancing. And even that was an innovation compared to what was America in the 1930s. I told you, it's the famous story of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, there was a wealthy donor to Torah Vadas, and he would help Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in 1938 when he visited America to raise money for Branovich. And he told Rabbi Chanan he'll give him a handsome donation, and Rabbi Chanan should be Masada Kedushin at the wedding of his daughter. And at the wedding, American style, under the chuppah, when it's all over and the kos is broken, the chatan kisses the kala. And Rabbi Chanan got very, very upset. And some of the Talmidim from Torah Vadas who hung around him said to him, Rebbe, what are you getting so upset? They're married. And Rabbi Chanan answered that the last words of the Torah, Nu Devarim, give me the last three words, Le'enei Kol Yisrael. That certain acts, if you do it, Le'enei Kol Yisrael, it's the end of the Torah. So you can understand what America was like. And by the way, that Chatan V'Kala meant no wrong, but that was Minig America. That's what they did. I think there's also video clippage of the Rav being Masada Kedushin in the in what do you call it, in the video, in the documentary that I was privileged to bring into the world. And there too you see the Chatan V'Kala. I don't know if they kissed or what at the end. I remember someone complained, how do you show this? No, this was America. What do you want? So he, Dov Frimmer raises the very question, do you need separate seating? And Myra Baim, when this question came up, I said, what went on in Europe? Was this given an idea? But what did you do in Europe? And the Rabbeim who were honest told me, in Europe there was never a question. Families, there was no such thing as place cards, no such thing as fancy weddings. You went to shul afterwards, there was a sudat mitzvah, family sat together. And in the Litvisha world, there's no concept of family separating. It's not like a gerer chassid. If you go to a gerer chassid's sheva brachas, it's going to be in two separate rooms. If you go Friday night to a gerer chassid's home, the women eat in one room and the men eat in another. That does not exist in our world. It goes against an open Mishnah and Ketuvah. You all know the story of the Chafetz Chaim and the Maram Lublin, the Maram Shapiro, and the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim refused to separate at his table. He said, I'm obligated Shabbos to sit with my wife. So, Dov Frimmer, who's very sharp, doesn't just ask the question. He refers to a tshuva from Rav Moshe. And here you can look it up and you'll get all the sources you want. I'm quoting the final place where Rav Moshe talks about this, where he's very brief and he gives you all the other sources. Igrat Moshe, it's Yoredeya Chelik Revi. This came out after Rav Moshe's demise. It was published in 1996. So it's Igrat Moshe Orachayim Chelik Hamishi and Yoredeya Chelik Revi. It was edited by Rav Moshe's grandson-in-law, who's married to Rabbi Tendler's daughter, Shabtai Avraham Akoin Rappaport. I believe he has a yeshiva in Efrat. You can correct me if I'm mistaken. I believe there's a Hezdi yeshiva, that he's one of the Ramim. He's a big Talmud Chacham. He has big Sach Tshavi Yichas, if I'm not mistaken. Rappaport. Okay? So, at the end of Siman Chaf Dalet in Yoredeya, Chaf Dalet, Yoredeya Dalet, Siman Chaf Dalet, at the end, in subdivision Gimel, and Reb Moshe writes, as far as having a machitza at a wedding, I already explained in previous volumes of Igrat Moshe, and he gives you the sources, Shahakiyav l'machitza yesh, rak l'dava, shepatuach l'rabin. V'chatuna nechshav k'davar prati. These are very sharp, insightful words. A public affair, there you have separate seating. What is a public affair? We'll go back to the Gemara in Sukkah. Public affairs where anyone can walk in. There's no concept of invitations. It's the Beis HaMikdash. It's the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. Each and every Jew can show. But a wedding is a private affair. You have to be invited. They have to know who you are. You know the Chatan V'Kala. People know you. At a wedding, you have no licentiousness. It's a controlled crowd. It is like family. It's exactly what my Rebbeim told me about Europe. Okay. So he throws this question at Reb Menashe Klein. And he quotes Reb Moshe Feinstein. And he wants to know from Reb Menashe Klein, is this correct? What do you call a makom prati? What is a chatuna? And what does this mean? And the Reb Menashe Klein totally disagrees with Reb Moshe. And Reb Menashe Klein says to him, you say, Reb Moshe says, Mokim Prati, you showed me Reb Moshe's tshuva. But what do you mean, Mokim Prati? Today, a wedding? At hotels. At halls. By the way, Reb Menashe Klein has a mistake here in his Hebrew. He uses the word, what's the word we use for a hotel? Malon. No, Malon is, to me, masculine. What should the plural be? Malonim. That's the word Reb Menashe Klein uses. What do we use in modern Hebrew? Malonot. Why is it malonot, not malonim? I think you go back to the old klal, that language is the way people speak it. And the way people speak it, for whatever the reasons are, we use the word malonot, not the word malonim. So I'm just cautioning you, when you see in the tshuva, he refers to the malonim, he says, how could that be private? And he says, you invite all types of people. Now, see here too, it's insight. You have to know social reality of the Jewish people. In the old shtetl, who did you invite? Family. In America today, in Israel today, a person gets married. Let's say in Israel, Aryeh Deri's daughter got married a few weeks ago. Every last politician who wants to be on the minister of the interior's good side made it his business to come to the wedding. You follow? What do you mean? People you know, private people. Today you make a wedding. It's not the children's wedding. It's the parents' wedding. I've often told parents, children have a right to determine who should be invited. You made the bar mitzvah. You made the bat mitzvah. You invited all your friends. Now it's the kids getting married. You're not getting married. You know how many arguments, controversies there have been between children and parents that they don't want 1,000 people. It's a private affair. It's a personal affair. It's a hamisher affair. Say what you wish. And then he makes another point, and this is fascinating. He says, not only that, but nowadays, outsiders will walk into the wedding. How do you call it private? And what do you mean outsiders will walk into the wedding? No? Have you ever seen schnurrers walk into the wedding? Go around. Some of them are not, you know, I worry that they're not stable. They're not totally with it. And they're coming in, they're collecting, they're bothering the people. We talk about a wedding today. People, they're legendary stories. People were invited to a wedding, come into the wedding, ate kedat v'kedin, and then they realize they're at the wrong wedding. They belong in the wedding, one flight up. And there's the story, I don't know about which Rosh Yeshiva, it could be it's Rabbi Gifter they tell it about, but they tell a story with a Rosh Yeshiva that they were going to a wedding and they got off at the wrong floor and they went into the wrong wedding, and then the Rosh Yeshiva realized he's at the wrong wedding. And he told the Talmidim who were with him, we have to go over and wish Mazel Tov. And I went over, wished Mazel Tov, looked for the chatan, the kala, the father, the mother, gave Mazel Tov, and then they walked out, got back in the elevator, and went up one more flight. So the Talmidim asked the Rosh Yeshiva, Rebbe, why did you do that? You don't know the people. They don't. He said, look, I'm a well-known personality. People saw that I walked in. It's true I walked in by mistake. But once the people saw me walk in, it would be arrogance on my part to walk out without wishing a mazel tov. So you learn from this, midah tovah. But Rav Menashe Klein is right. The whole outside world can come in. What does Rav Moshe mean that it is makom prati?
And in Europe, be that weddings were the shnoreh.
It could be. Could be. But we're talking about Europe. We're talking about 80, 90 years ago. The Holocaust upset the apple cart. But he alludes to something else here. Today, where are many weddings held, even though we're not happy about it? Weddings are held in shuls. It's become minhag hamakom. I told you the great synagogue was built. Of course, the great synagogue today is in disarray. If you saw the weekend's papers, I cried in Yediyot Yerushalayim. I couldn't believe we were just in the great synagogue. And we went Shabbos morning to the Gabbai, and we wanted to see what's going on with the Chabad minyan. So the lights were dim, and I walked on a stairway. I couldn't believe how filthy, how dirty, going down. And then we read there are tremendous financial problems, the great synagogue, Heichal Shlomo. It's not what it used to be. But when the great synagogue was built, I remember the dedication. They built it out tonight that they should be able to have weddings there. The tonight was made publicly. And I was at a number of weddings there. And it's a big problem. What's a wedding doing in a synagogue? A wedding is a maisa chol. It's not the Dabar Shebe Kedusha. But there is a concept, and here's what Alex and I were dialoguing before. We're affected by the outside world. And anyone who's grown up in Western society has seen movies in the church where they're getting married, and the priest or the minister. So little by little, it surfaced in the Jewish world that weddings are in synagogues in modern times. Rav David Lifshitz would not go to a wedding if he knew it was in his shul. He would not go. It's a real. If it was in his shul, yeah. There's a Chatam Sofer, and there was a lot of opposition. Nevertheless, there is a positive side that if it's in a shul, it has more dignity, it has less wildness to it, it has more sanctity. It's lo pashut b'zman hazeh. And we struggle with this question. But Reb Menashe Klein says that when something is in a shul, nothing is more public than a shul, then how come we call it a private affair? And he does not agree with Reb Moshe. Now, then he quotes a Gemara. Gemara, this is a Gemara in Kedushin Pei Aleph Amid Aleph. It's a famous, famous Gemara that they talk about Abaye, that Abaye would put up jugs and make partitions of jugs. I guess we would call jugs big bottles of water. Partitions of canes. He would put up canes next to one another. What was the purpose? And Rashi explains that this was at public gatherings. This was at weddings. This is when people came together, that they made a, and you'll see Rashi, whether it was a chuppah or a drasha, Rashi uses the words kvutzat anashim v'nashim l'drasha o l'chuppah hayam esadeh kankanim shel cheres habei b'nechem shem yavol ze etzo ze yishkash kishu v'yashmiyu kol. And we come back to the old problem that haunts us until today. Men are men, women are women. The sexual urge is part of reality. Not everyone knows or cares to control it. And here you're talking about Jews at weddings, at drasha, and they would intermingle. To keep the men and women from intermingling, they put up what we would call bells, that if you start walking, the bells start to ring. So right away, people will know a man is in the women's section, get out. And if that's the case, you have an open Rashi, which states that you need a partition at a wedding. And even a drasha, imagine a drasha. How can sex be on someone's mind when he's hearing a drasha, bekedusha, vitara, shas for poskim, divrei machshava, and yet there is a reality. And we got to live with that reality. And this is Rashi, and this is a proof against Reb Moshe. How can you call it a private affair? So he is very much against what Reb Moshe says. And he says, look, he doesn't want to come out black and white against Reb Moshe, but he says perhaps what Reb Moshe is talking about, Chatuna she'ein shem rak asara b'nei Adam. And you see, this takes us, when you get married in Israel, you can arrange to have a little wedding right in the Mo'atza Hadatit. They'll set up a kiddush, set up a collation, you have a minion of people, the Shalom al Yisrael. So Reb Menashe Klein says, maybe Reb Moshe is referring to small marriages. Of course, I need not tell you, logically speaking, rationally speaking, statistically speaking, people getting married for the first time, it's not a small marriage. Where do you find a small marriage? A second marriage. That's where you find a small marriage. Why in a second marriage? Many times do you find a small marriage for very practical reasons, not to offend the children. Children, and this, I don't want to go into endless detail, but I've been involved with this. I've at times been asked to speak with children because my mother had a very blessed second marriage. Children resent the fact that a parent remarries. To children, it is an affront to the memory of their late father. That my mother should remarry, it's smacking my father's face. That my father should remarry, it's smacking the memory of our mother. Now, this is a justifiable feeling. You can understand it. But there's a reality to life. Life has to move on. The lebedikim daf gein vaita. If you're alive, you have to go further. And lo tov heyot ha'adam levato. There are some people who can't live alone, and they need help, they need a partner. So there, where you have children, where you have arguments, where people are resentful, that's where you're going to have a small marriage, like Reb Menashe Klein is talking about, lahatztik et Reb Moshe Feinstein. And I'll end off on bring it down to the level of what everyone in Israel is talking about, the shtisel. So you see in shtisel, but see if you can get a few fellows. They're coming. Great. See, no, we have time. See, what's your problem, Shaya?
I just have to.
Go ahead. We're not ready to daven. We're not ready. Yeah. We're in shtisel. So when Reb Shalomka is talking with that woman about remarriage, so they start talking about how they're going to remarry. And he drops her right away, you see. By the way, she's a very famous actress, the one who plays Menucha. And the one who plays the mother, Malka, is also Leah Koenig. She's one of the most famous actresses in Israel. And you see her native language is Mamalush and is Yiddish. It's amazing how good that Yiddish is. So Menucha is telling, he says, we'll have a small marriage. We don't want to offend the children. And she wants a big marriage. She's been marrying, you know, she's making plans. She wants a hall, if you recall that episode. But that episode and that dusiach, that the conversation, that dialogue, is exactly the question of a second marriage. How big a crown did you have? Most people in a second marriage, it's taka a minion, not much more. So there Rav Menashe Klein says, maybe that is what Rav Moshe is talking about, but not a regular wedding. Okay, next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we're going to pick up exactly where we left off with a very, very fascinating Beit Yosef and deal with the whole question, weddings and Sheva Brachas. And then we come into a question from the rabbinate, which unfortunately haunted us in the 50s into the 60s. Today, the world is a little different. I attribute it to Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. I may be right, I may be wrong. You might say I'm prejudiced, but I think I'm on solid ground. So to reiterate, what did we do today? The world of Rav Menashe Klein, the Tashbetz, how it enters halachic literature, and you see that the achronim are willing that the word that the Ramai uses, if there's no choice, the word that the Ramai uses, we see that, all right, if a woman winds up being a sandakot, perhaps with the Eved, we can accept it graciously. And I really have to apologize because I was very upset when I heard it. I said, wow, what we're getting into here. But you see, there is a feeling, certainly a kvatranit is not a shiloh whatsoever. And to assist the husband to play a role, the grandmother who saw her daughter go through the travails of birth, be'etzev tel di banim, we can understand it. The shaila to, and then, of course, getting involved with the maid cleaning the house, who has the obligation to learn Torah. Just think for a minute. I went into the Bernard Rebel Graduate School in 1963, I think it was, when Pearl Cotton, the recorder, was telling me, get yourself a topic, get started in research. Before you know it, you'll complete your coursework, and you will not have a doctorate. And many rabbis completed coursework and never did the thesis. So I came in bright and early, saw Dr. Lander, Bernie Lander, and I presented to him the topic to do a doctorate on the Netziv of Volozhin. And 2 weeks later, they came back to me and told me, it's a nice idea what you have, but we have a different idea, and the rest is history. A lady did a doctorate on the Netziv of Volozhin at Hebrew University, okay? And as I said before, a lady just did an amazing doctorate on the Minchat Chinuch. Minchat Chinuch is heavy, heavy bananas. Wow! You got to be familiar with the Minchat Chinuch. What an innovative mind! And how do we deal with these problems? And walking around at night, dangerous, not dangerous, wow, Rav Menashe Klein. But at the end he backs off, if you make the shirm by day, I won't be so completely opposed. Then we went into Dov Frimmer and the whole question of, as we saw, a chatuna. Is it a makom prati or is it open to the public? The Gemara in Kedushin, and you can see that Rav Menashe Klein differs with Rav Moshe, but he tries lalameit schut. Maybe he's talking about second weddings that generally have a small crowd. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off. Very fascinating material, and it gives a total balance of Chabad today reality. Yitzchak is not right. He started listening via the website. He's going to be missed because he was a counterfoil. This is a tshuva by the conservative rabbinate on eating legumes on Pesach. And I couldn't believe what they write at the end. In order to bring down the cost of making Pesach and support the healthier diet that is now becoming more common, and given the inapplicability today of the primary concerns that seem to lead to the custom of prohibiting kidneyot, and further, given our implication in our data present an accessible Judaism, uncovered by unneeded prohibitions, more easily able to participate in the culture that surrounds us. And they permit the eating of kidneyot and Pesach. I have to say, let me tell you, this is very, very shocking to see reliable people among them. Their YU graduates here signing on. I was flabbergasted.
Is this from
the conservative rabbinate. Conservative rabbinate I'm talking about, but they've gone.
That's the
antithesis of any halachic thinking. Anyone who knows about Sharansky and 30 years ago since he crossed the bridge, here's a beautiful article by his daughter. Anyone who knows who Rabbi Cheskel Sana was, the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron, of tremendous litvak, even some anti-Hasidic feelings, here's a picture of his grandfather with a bekesha, a shtreimel, and a gartel, most important a gartel, and who knows if that isn't the Nusach HaRisidah. Anyone who doesn't believe Rakepit when he says we live in two worlds, here is from Lakewood, advertisements from their kosher place there, Super Sunday Special, the day of the big football game, special food that you can order when you're watching the game with Allah Hashkafkas in the world.
The halftime show has to be
made. Anyone who's interested in the machlekes going on over open orthodoxy, here is Mark Shapiro's attack on Rabbi Grademer that has caused such a storm, backwards and forwards. Here is a conservative rabbi asking Hillary Clinton an amazing question from the famous quote that Rakefet quotes in Washington: in one pocket you carry around Vatasem Miat Melokhim, and in the other pocket Vanochi Ofer Ve'efa. How do you balance it out? Here is an article from the New York Times: Kumo moves against therapy that claims to make gay children straight. And I tell you, I know cases where great gay children were helped by therapy. Here's about that poor man who was killed by the crane that fell. In Tui Meet Again in Health and Happiness, Das Vadanya, who we have here, Bal Tvila Moshe, Gosei Bahurachim. Bahurachim, there's Sidurim over here if anyone needs.